Welcome to IP Management Voice, the podcast spotlighting leading minds in IP and IP management. This series supports the IP Business Academy's call for subject matter experts to share insights, foster reflection, and strengthen the global IP system. Join the conversation via our newsletter and explore cutting-edge content on D-Plex. The content featured in this episode on shifting innovation, from improving existing solutions to redefining meaning, comes from Roberto Verganti.
Forget everything you think you know about innovation, or at least maybe refine it a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we're diving into why just making something better isn't always the real goal. We're exploring a really compelling perspective on how true breakthroughs happen.
Not just in tech, right?
Yeah.
We're talking art, design,
yeah,
the whole creative sphere.
Exactly. It's this idea that, well, often we're just tweaking existing solutions, making them faster, cheaper, whatever.
Polishing the surface.
Yeah. But the real sort of game-changing stuff, that comes from questioning the meaning behind what we're doing.
It's a subtle shift, but yeah, completely changes the approach.
And this thinking comes straight from a lecture by Professor Roberto Verganti at the Stockholm School of Economics. It was titled Design-Driven Innovation and Radical Invention of Arts.
Ah, Verganti. Yes.
Yeah.
And beautifully summarized by Professor Alexander Wurzer in the IP Management Letters. We should mention that.
Absolutely. So our mission today for you listening is to really unpack Verganti's ideas. How do we get from just, you know, improving things to discovering entirely new significance, especially now with AI changing everything?
It's timely because that constant push for optimization, for just incremental improvements, it's everywhere.
Right. Think about the first digital watches. The goal was simple. Tell time more accurately, maybe cheaper than the old mechanical ones.
Solving the existing problem, just with new tech, solution-oriented.
Precisely. But Verganti pushes us towards something deeper. Forget a slightly better digital watch. Think about Swatch. We'll get into that. It wasn't about telling time better. It was about changing what a watch meant.
A total redefinition. It wasn't just a tool anymore.
So what sparks that? That deeper innovation. It's not just spotting a problem and finding a fix.
No, it's a shift in perspective. It's about challenging the why.
And that's what Verganti calls meaning-oriented innovation. It doesn't start with, how can we improve this widget?
No, it starts way earlier. Like, what is this widget really about? What significance does it hold?
Challenging the core assumptions.
Exactly. Why does it exist? Is that reason still valid? Or is there a completely different purpose waiting?
He uses this brilliant example from music back in the 80s. Remember the Fairlight CMI, the early digital sampler and synth?
Oh, yeah. Groundbreaking tech.
So when it came to digital drums, the first instinct for many was just make cleaner drum sounds, more precise maybe, cheaper than a session drummer.
Makes sense. Using the new tool to do the old job, just, you know, more efficiently. Substitution.
Total substitution. The idea of what drums didn't really change.
But then you get someone like Peter Gabriel.
Right. Instead of just getting a perfect digital snare sound, he starts, well, recording the sound of exploding television tubes.
Exploding TVs. Seriously.
Apparently. He wasn't trying to perfectly replicate a drum kit. He was exploring entirely new sonic landscapes.
Mm.
What could percussion even be?
That's fascinating. He wasn't solving the drum sound problem. He was inventing a whole new auditory experience, redefining the possibility.
And that is what Verganti calls an epiphany. That moment, a new meaning just clicks into place, not by fixing something, but by totally reframing it.
Ah, the epiphany. So for Gabriel, percussion wasn't just beats anymore.
No, it became this rich tapestry of texture, impact, enabled by the tech, sure, but driven by a completely new artistic vision. Verganti points out this fed into the whole world music genre, new aesthetics.
A genuine reinvention, not just making it better, making it different in a fundamental way.
And you see the same pattern with wristwatches. Digital tech arrives.
First wave is cheaper, more accurate timepieces, substitution again, serving the basic function better.
But then Swatch blows that wide open. Suddenly the watch isn't primarily about telling time accurately.
It's fashion. It's self-expression. Telling time is almost secondary.
And because they were affordable, people bought multiples to match outfits.
The meaning just completely flipped from functional tool to identity statement.
Exactly. The tech enabled it, but the innovation was redefining its significance.
And that's Verganti's core point, isn't it? Technology's real power isn't just replication or improvement. It's enabling us to find or create entirely new meanings.
These epiphanies, these meaning-driven shifts, they're the ones that really shake things up, reshape industries, culture even.
Which brings us right up to today and AI. Artificial intelligence moving into creative spaces, art, writing, design.
Oh yeah, the debates are raging. Remember that AI artwork winning a prize?
Caused quite a stir. It forces that question. What even is art? It feels a bit like when photography first appeared.
Briganti makes that exact parallel. People feared cameras would kill painting.
But they didn't. Instead, painting evolved. We got impressionism, abstraction. Artists explored things beyond just realistic depiction, things cameras couldn't do or prompted them to see differently.
So Briganti's take on AI isn't about fear of replacement. It's about looking for the potential epiphanies.
Right. Instead of asking, will AI replace artists? We should be asking,
what totally new forms of creation, what new meanings will AI make possible?
It reframes the whole conversation. From defense to exploration, what new creative avenues open up?
Okay, so shifting from just solving problems to finding new meaning. That's not just a light bulb moment, is it? Briganti argues it needs a whole different way of working.
A different process entirely. And it starts, interestingly, with rethinking design itself.
How so?
He looks at the Latin root, designare, which means to designate or to give meaning.
Ah, so design isn't just making things look nice or work well. It's fundamentally about embedding significance, giving meaning through form, function, maybe even story.
It's sense-making, asking, does this resonate? Does it mean something important? Not just does it work efficiently. It puts design closer to art or philosophy, you know. Disciplines concerned with interpretation and meaning.
That leads him to contrast inside-out innovation with the more common outside-in.
Outside-in being the typical user-centered approach. Observe users, find needs, design solutions.
Exactly. Think ideas design, thinking, lots of empathy, user observation, great for incremental improvements, refining things based on feedback.
Sure, very valuable for that.
But Briganti says for the really radical shifts, the meaning changes, you need to go inside out.
Mm-hmm.
Starting from the innovator's own values, their vision, their intuition, what they believe should exist, even if users aren't asking for it yet.
So he's suggesting that focusing too much on current user behavior might actually limit you, because you're anchored in what is, not what could be.
That's the core argument. You might miss the truly novel possibilities that lie outside the current frame.
Interesting. Any examples of this inside-out approach?
He uses the Nintendo Wii brilliantly. Remember when Sony and Microsoft were in that arms race? More power, better graphics, complex controllers.
Oh yeah, chasing the hardcore gamer market, what they thought users wanted.
But Nintendo didn't play that game. They didn't just try to build a slightly better PlayStation based on observing gamers.
No, they completely reimagined what gaming could mean.
Right.
Made it physical, social, accessible. Brought in people who never considered themselves gamers.
Exactly. That wasn't driven by focus groups saying, we want to wave controllers around. It came from Nintendo's internal vision of making gaming more inclusive and fun for everyone. A classic inside-out move that changed the meaning of video games.
And Briganti stresses the emotional commitment needed for that kind of leap. He quotes Steve Wozniak.
Oh, the Apple co-founder. What did he say?
Something like, if you design something you don't love, how will others love it?
That hits home. If you're not passionate about your own radical idea, good luck convincing anyone else, especially when it's totally new.
That personal conviction, that love for the idea, it's almost strategic. It fuels you through the inevitable pushback.
And Briganti connects this to a company's core values. This isn't just a Skunkworks project. It needs leadership buy-in. He uses this metaphor, the good parent.
A good parent. How does that relate? The idea is like a good parent, a responsible designer or company, doesn't just cater to every immediate whim or desire of the user.
Ah, they think longer term. About what's actually beneficial, what elevates the user's experience or understanding.
Exactly. It's about aiming higher than just fulfilling stated needs. It introduces an ethical dimension, almost, guiding desires, not just satisfying them.
Which feels very different from just giving the customer what they ask for.
It implies a responsibility beyond pure problem solving. You're shaping culture in a small way.
Okay, this is deep. And it connects to another crucial idea, reframing.
Reframing. So it's not always about a brand new idea, but seeing existing things differently.
Precisely. Like those optical illusions, same lines, totally different image depending on how you look. A breakthrough idea might be staring you in the face, but you miss it because you're stuck in an old way of seeing.
You're evaluating it with the wrong framework.
The classic example he uses is Nokia versus Apple with the smartphone.
Right. Nokia actually had a lot of the tech early on, didn't they? Touchscreens, rudimentary apps.
They had the pieces, but they were stuck in the frame of phone communication device. Better calls, better messaging.
They kept optimizing within that box.
Well, Apple came along and completely reframed it. It wasn't just a phone. It was
your life in your pocket. Music, internet, apps, camera. Everything integrated into one device that felt essential, emotionally resonant.
And Nokia's downfall wasn't a lack of engineers or money. It was a failure to see the value in that entirely different meaning, a failure to reframe.
That's a powerful lesson. It wasn't about inventing more. It was about seeing differently.
And Verganti brings in this concept of myths from the philosopher Umberto Galimberti.
Myths. Like ancient legends.
Not quite. More like the deep-seated stories and assumptions we collectively hold that shape how we understand reality. The unconscious narratives.
Ah, okay. Like cultural programming, almost.
Yeah. And in innovation, these myths act like filters. They dictate what ideas seem plausible, valuable, even thinkable. The myth that phones needed physical keyboards probably slowed down touchscreens, for example.
So real innovation isn't just about having more ideas within the current myth or frame.
It's about challenging and changing the frame itself. Changing the myth.
Which is hard. It means criticizing your own assumptions, maybe even questioning the things that made you successful before.
Super hard. It's much easier to stick with what you know. But Verganti argues, especially when things are changing fast like now, sticking to old frames is dangerous, like Nokia.
So reframing becomes an act of leadership. Having the courage to question the status quo.
Absolutely. To envision possibilities beyond the current reality.
And this ties back to AI, doesn't it? If we judge AI art only by the standards of human painting,
we miss its unique potential. We're using an old frame for a new phenomenon.
We need new frames to even understand what we're looking at.
So Verganti's call is for innovators, leaders, all of us really, to become frame makers, to actively craft new ways of seeing and valuing things.
Create new lenses for interpretation.
He makes an interesting observation about fields like architecture and art. They're often strong on that inside-out, vision-driven innovation.
But sometimes resistant to major reframing, clinging to tradition.
Yeah, think about how controversial Impressionism was initially, or even something like the Memphis Design Movement. They challenged existing aesthetic frames.
And critics often struggle, right? If something doesn't fit the established metrics, it's hard to evaluate. He mentions Fotografiska, the photography museum.
Which embraces more experiential approaches, maybe not fitting tidy, critical boxes.
It all leads to his big question. Who will be the new creators?
Especially with AI tools becoming more accessible. Does it mean creators will come from unexpected places? People who can just grab these tools and run with them?
He uses that Ratatouille analogy, anyone can cook. Or perhaps anyone can create if they have the vision and the tools.
The key, he insists, isn't your age, it's your mindset. Are you willing to change your frames? That's what makes you fantastically new.
And these shifts aren't isolated. Think Memphis Design influencing Alessi products, or Apple's whole aesthetic shaping consumer expectations far beyond computers.
It's systemic change, which leads Verganti to call on designers to take more responsibility.
Responsibility for what?
For the values they embed in their creations. To think about the impact on the whole ecosystem, not just the immediate user. He's a bit critical of design thinking, sometimes leading to, well, maybe superficial tweaks rather than deep, meaningful change.
Moving beyond just user convenience to consider broader implications.
Someone apparently asked him if radical change is always good.
A fair question. What did he say?
His view seems to be that with major technological shifts like AI, radical change is probably coming whether we like it or not.
So the focus shouldn't be on stopping it, but on guiding it.
Exactly. Guiding its meaning through reflection on our values, through dialogue about what good actually looks like in this new context.
Which is complex. Assessing the value of a new meaning involves looking at the whole system, the long-term effects.
So wrapping this up, the big takeaway seems to be stop focusing only on better solutions.
And start having the courage to redefine meaning. Look for those epiphanies that come from reframing.
Which makes you wonder, what epiphanies might be brewing right now in your own world? What assumptions are just waiting to be questioned?
What frames need shattering?
Verganti's final thought is pretty powerful. He sees this moment as a huge opportunity for anyone in a creative field. but it demands change from everyone involved.
Creators, critics, investors, educators.
Yeah.
We all need to be willing to adapt our own perspectives, our own frames.
So the final question for you to chew on. As AI and other tech keep evolving at warp speed, what new frames do we absolutely need to develop to understand, shape, and find meaning in the future of creativity and innovation?
And what underlying myths about how things work or who gets to create do we need to finally leave behind?
Thanks for listening to IP Management Voice. If there's any topic you'd like us to cover in this podcast or on the content platform Dplex, please get in contact and let us know.